Listen, all you people, may the entire earth pay attention. The Sovereign Lord Jehovah comes as a witness against you, the Sovereign Lord from his holy temple. And that is Micah chapter 1, verse 2. And there are actually 7 chapters, I believe, in Micah. Let's find out. Well, that's Nahum. Right, we'll go. I read Micah, but I was looking at Nahum there. Yeah, 7 chapters in Micah. In my other Bible copy, I was looking at the book of Nahum, which comes Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk in that order, is how they appear in the Protestant Bible. So the book of Micah, that was chapter 1, verse 2 from the Ward Green version of 2003, Little Children, our daily scripture for today. And I think our topic, our study for today, is exciting, as it was yesterday too, to study the site of the Ark. It's really exciting because we've got a book here by Jacob Bryant from 1807, 6 volumes, and in volume 4 of that book, he says, Ararat. Ar hyphen Ararat is the word Ararat. At the foot of Mount Arad, or Ar hyphen Ararat, A-R-A-T, was the district where the patriarch. This is interesting. The region of the Minyi, Minyi, M-I-N-Y-A-E. And he mentions the word Gokarin. That's page 8. That's right. We're going to talk about that later at the end of this article. The Greek word Gokarin, which would be probably pronounced Gokarene. And that's going to be interesting too. Really, for me, very interesting. And now the region of Ar hyphen Ararat was the district where the patriarch, Noah, that is, and his family first resided. It was upon the river Araxes. Is that a footnote? What is that? There it is. Yeah, the Araxes is properly... Oh, it's footnote 19. The Araxes, A-R-A-X-E-S. It looks like arc, doesn't it? A-R-X. If you ignore the vowels, you have arcs. If you ignore all except the first A, that is, of the vowels, you have A-R-X. It is properly the river of Arak, and that, there you have arc. If you ignore the middle vowel A, you have A-R-C-H, which may be pronounced arc. And he also spells it Araka. Again, it's just Ark if you leave out the final two vowels, which signifies the river of the Ark, he says in that footnote. And that's in the book Jacob Bryant, which is referred to in our footnote here, number 2 footnote. It's his book, A New System or An Analysis of Ancient Mythology in 6 volumes from 1807. Now, at the beginning of this paragraph 3 of chapter 12, which is what we're doing today. Oh, I just realized something is very bright. This has to be dimmed down. There we go. It's better, I think. Maybe it'll be too dim now. I might have to... Yeah, I do have to boost it a little bit for my camera brightness, I think. Might be okay, I think, there. I don't know. So, this is a remarkable story, and, I mean, we already saw chapter 12, paragraph 2 was amazing. By the way, I looked up the word photogrammetric, I believe is how you pronounce that. not the way I pronounced it, which I would like to forget, but let's see. Look up photogrammetric. Photogrammetry. Photogrammetry is how they recommend pronouncing it. Photogrammetry in the American Dictionary, I guess it is, or the Oxford American Dictionary, or it's Apple's Dictionary. I think that's what it is, but about the dictionary, it says it's Apple's Dictionary for their OS. And I had somehow come to believe it was the Oxford American Dictionary, but I'm not sure now, but that's okay. We don't need to know everything. We can never know everything. It's impossible. Well, no matter how hard we try, right? No matter how hard we try. Now, paragraph 3, the Aras, that's the river, A-R-A-S, Aras River, in brackets, Araxes, A-R-A-X-E-S, and Arax, A-R-A-C-H-S. Done something wrong here with my camera setting, with the positioning. There we go. Indicates by its name, the Arax, or the Aras, that it is named after the Ark. Noah's Ark. The Aras River. And since this is so, it's named after the Ark, it becomes apparent, since this is so, that Mount Ararat is also named after it. So the Ararat mountain range is named after the Ark. Isn't that a revelation? Mount Ararat is actually further from the Aras than the Ark, meaning further from the river. The mountain is further from the river, reducing Ararat's claim to the Ark, because the river is closer in between the two and closer to the Ark. So it's not that the Ark landed on Mount Ararat, but it landed in the mountains of Ararat, of Urartu, which is the same word as Ararat with different vowels, which is fine because vowels were never preserved in the ancient languages. The Ark is 18 miles or 29 kilometers distant from Ararat, the mountain that is. Well, it is 5 miles or 8 kilometers as the crow flies from the Aras, whose river valley is named Valley of Eight. It's the Aras River. And the Aras River Valley is named Valley of Eight. That's a number, eight, which is the same number as the number of survivors on the Ark. Noah, his three sons, and their wives, which were four altogether. So eight in total people on the Ark. At the time, now, much later than the deluge, the time of Josephus, born in about 37, they say they know his birth was exactly 37, based on what I'm writing here, and he died in approximately, or circa, 100 CE. That was the time of Josephus, and at the time of his writing, there was no doubt, or at the time of Josephus, his writing left no doubt that the Ark was still visible in Armenia. This is what he wrote. Quote, "Now the Armenians call this the place of landing because the Ark found salvation there, and its wreck remains there on exhibit even to this very time." Translated by yours truly, Ward Green, right there it says. And I don't know what I translated that from. It's not clear. I'm not going to check the references right now. But also footnote 16. Oh, footnote 16. I don't think that's going to be a link that's going to be available. Because Gutenberg has changed their links, I think. I don't think it's going to work, so I'm not going to try it. The footnote to the above indicates that by Mr. Whiston's time, that footnote mentioned there to that statement by Josephus, in the translation by William Whiston, he made footnotes. And Mr. Whiston's time was 1667 to 1752 of our common era. By his time, the ark was concealed in the mud, according to that footnote. He says Ptolemy called the city found at the landing site Naxuana, N-A-X-U-A-N-A. Later, Moses Carenzus called it Idshuan, I-D-S-H-E-U-A-N. That it was called the first place of descent, Mr. Whiston's footnote observes, is shown by the name for the city given it by the locals, saying Nakidshuan. Nakidshuan sounds a lot like Naxuan, doesn't it? The place of the first descent, according to David Deal, is a name that accounts for a later descent by the mud, and the place of the first descent is in italics, as is, the first mention of this phrase, the first place of descent, that's in italics, and then it's reworded, the place of the first descent, by David Deal, both of which were in italics, and the names are in italics too, Naxuana, Idshuan, and Nakidshuan, the place of the first descent, according to David Deal. Nakidshuan, according to David Deal, is a name that accounts a later descent by the mud. He astutely points out that Strong's Hebrew word number 2298 is the word for curd, K-H-D, Hebrew, and means, in the Hebrew, that means first, in harmony with the Kurds being the first inhabitants there, the first ones living there. In Judy Dagi, Kurd Mountain, the guttural Hebrew KH rasp is unpronounceable to an Arab because in Arabic they pronounce it Judy. Or I should say that's why in Arabic they pronounce it Judy. The Uzengil or High Limestone Ridge, quote unquote, saddle, which is the main north-south escarpment. This is a quote from David Allen Deal in his book Naxuan, The Lost City of Noah Found, from the year 2000. He says the Uzengil or High Limestone Ridge Saddle, which is the main north-south escarpment, is a ridge, you know, or a change in altitude, you know, a sudden change of altitude in the land, right? That's an escarpment. It's also called Yigi Tiategi, which means hero's anchorage or bed, in quotes, hero's anchorage or bed, unquote. That's it for the quote from the book Naxuan, The Lost City of Noah Found, which was written by David Allen Deal. So it's interesting that the name Uzengili for the town actually refers to that high ridge. It means that, in fact, which is that mountain that we called, what do we call it, that mountain? Let's see. Let's go and find out what that was called now. What's it called? The Wall of Heaven. One name for it. It's called that by Gilgamesh. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, he calls it the Wall of Heaven. We need to find out, where's the pictures for it? Here it is. The wall of heaven, we call it there, in that picture. What else is it called so I can search for it? But there's a name for the one part of it too, on the left compared to the, it's called Mount Judy on the right, but on the left it's called the wall of heaven, I guess. But it looks like a crown too, so I think it might have another name. I'm trying to remember what we called it. So many things, I can't remember them all. Like the Bible says, the one who uses many words will not be without error, right? There are going to be mistakes when you say a lot of things. It's inevitable. Something you say is going to be incorrect because you're saying so many things. In other words, you're talking too much. Which I can say has been true of me in the case of when I'm presenting these articles. It's really difficult not to say a lot. Let's look for Wall of Heaven, see what else we can find. Diadem. We'll think of it later. But Wall of Heaven is a good name for that ridge. Right? The Knights Templar. Okay, the Knights Templar, they're a very famous organization. And we have a date for the Knights Templar, 1120 to 1312, which is a period of almost 200 years. They honored those knights, the landing site. They honored it. The mountain in eastern Turkey where the Ark landed, which is the one we're talking about, of course, has a counterpart in southern France named Cardu or Couiza that lies on the same longitude as Paris. And the Cardu or Cordu, Judy, in Turkey, is also called Baris, after Paris. Nicolas Poussin painted Cardu in his Et in Arcadia Ego, which is Latin. And then I put a date in this paragraph. The date, 2011, July 1st. I note there was Canada Day, 144 years after Confederation, which was 1867. 1867, of course, plus 33 is 1900, right? And then 111 plus 33 is 144 to get to 2011. Last night I found some origin of the green, or, in brackets, Gurion name. Namely, this is exciting for me when I found this. Namely, so that means the night before Canada Day, I found some origin for the green name, namely, quote-unquote, Arene, A-R-E-N-E, is the R-E means the Ark. Compare with the Aras River, A-R-A-S, A-R-A-S compared to A-R-E-N-E. Arene means the Ark. That's what I found. And C or G, the first letter, uppercase C or G, was added to make it Karin or Garin, with a Greek word Gogarin, that is Gokarin, meaning region of the Ark. In italics, the words region of the Ark. So isn't that astounding? That is, I mean, that there is actually a word in Greek meaning region of the Ark, and it's Gokarin, which is incorporates the green name there, Karin or green, green, Garin, green. If you just leave out the A between the G and the R, you have green, green, G-R-E-N-E. And then if you just flip the second E so that it appears before the N, you have G-R-E-E-N, which is my name. So I discovered the origin of my own name. It came from the word for ark. According to that research, which absolutely was what I was looking for when I began my first efforts, when I started to research my family origins, that was my dream, was to find the origin of my own family, right? My own family name was actually something I didn't really think would have an origin like that. No, never dreamed it. Didn't. We still have 13 minutes, almost. And that is all for our study of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express today. That was part 2, chapter 12, paragraph 3, about the Aras River and the green name and all these other interesting details about how these places near the Ark indicate that they are, in fact, the original landing site of the Ark. We studied yesterday how the Ark came to rest, which didn't mean it landed, but it came to rest, right? Landing is different from coming to rest. It just stopped moving at the time when it came to rest because the anchor stones had struck the bottom, and they were very heavy. It struck the ground underneath this amazing amount of water that had fallen down and come up from below during the deluge. In the account of the deluge, which is in Genesis chapter 7 through 9, those chapters. Okay, so what else is there to talk about? Oh, yeah. Well, my heart beats still fast. Wow, 15 beats in 10 seconds. 90 beats per minute. So that, I now believe that it wasn't just that one day of drinking the extra calcium that did it. But that could have been it, of course. But I think it could be the amount of vitamin D that I've been taking prior to that. No, maybe not. Maybe not. There's so much vitamin D in my system, though, that once you take... I think the vitamin D I was taking... Cumulatively, the amount of D that I was taking, it wasn't much if I only took that much every so often, but if I take it every day, 60,000 units, it's too much. But only when I took the calcium in the large amount did it actually happen that I overdosed. Before that, I was able to just carry on fine. So it really, if you want to or need to take a lot of vitamin D, you need to watch the calcium very closely. And this is bad. But I feel great today. Like, I did a lot of work today. I don't feel bad. I just know that I have to get my heart rate down again. So today I was in excellent physical condition. I was out. I hauled multiple wheelbarrows of wood so that I can just go out and get the wood now. I don't have to go out and lift the tarp up every time. I've stored it under some shelter so I can just go and pick it up when I need it much more quickly. I can even go out and get it in the middle of the night if I need to much more easily now. So, and I could have done that with the it being under a tarp out in the open too, but it's just not something you want to be doing in the dark. You're more likely to get injured because I have a big pile of wood and it could, the big chunks of wood could slide down and hit my foot, and I don't like to wear, you know, steel toes and stuff. I just don't like steel toes, because with steel toes, if you ever drop anything extremely heavy or something heavy falls on the steel toe, it can cut your toes off. That's why I don't like steel toes. So they have composite toes and things like that too, but I just don't like that kind of protection for my feet. I like to have a toe that's just a normal boot toe. So anyway, I'm out there wearing just rubber boots or something. That's all I'm wearing out there. Or rubber loafers is what I was wearing. But as long as I don't drop anything on my foot, it's fine. I'd rather be that way than, you know, have to put on boots every time I go out. You know, and in the snow, I don't want to wear my good boots. I'd rather just wear my boots when I'm walking on the street, or if I'm shoveling the snow, I'll put on my winter boots if there's a lot of shoveling. But even for that, I can wear my rubber loafers, just slip-on rubbers, you know, that just serve as a shoe, but they're waterproof. So I've had them for many years, that particular pair of shoes. But, I mean, I was out there working, so I was hauling all this wood, and then I had to haul some in, and I felt, you know, quite good today strength-wise, you know, so that wasn't a problem. I've got to gargle with the xylitol very shortly after this video, because I can tell my throat is potentially going to get a strep infection or something. I can feel it. It's easy to tell. It's easy to tell when you've been there a few times. And when you've cured it a few times, I know what the cure is. You just gargle with xylitol, kills the strep, prevents it from growing, and you've gotten, and it kills all the bad bacteria, not just strep. So it might be even more beyond, it might be even far more impressive than what I'm describing it as. That is, I'm talking about xylitol. Xylitol is just this natural sugar alcohol that is found in food, in fruit. Typically, there's some, but small amounts of it in that food. And they've gotten it, extracted it from natural sources. I don't think they get it from fruit when they extract it, but they got it from natural sources, and they made these granules that they're almost as sweet as sugar, and they're just about the same as sugar in many ways. Well, they don't taste exactly like sugar, though, but I think they're the sweetest of all the sugar alcohols in taste, but they don't spike the blood sugar. So they're excellent for people who are diabetic or who want to avoid diabetes, as well as being anti-cancer. They're excellent for the teeth. Like, it prevents all cavities because it kills all the bad bacteria. If you chew a lot of the gum, like a significant amount of gum, like more than one piece, maybe you have to chew, like I do, I chew 6 pieces at once. And if it's too much for me, I just take it out of my mouth, because you can be sensitive to it. And I am sensitive to it. It can make my throat sore, but it's not the kind of soreness that will cause an infection. But it's a beautiful, beautiful cure. It also relieves constipation. There's a long list of things it does. There's a medical article called The List of All the Things. It prevents respiratory infections. Oh my goodness, it's just goes on and on and on. I think this is the article here. Xylitol's health benefits beyond dental health. A comprehensive review by Krista Sally, Marcus J. Leitinen, Kirsty T. Honen, however you pronounce that, it's two I's in a row, T. Honen, Arthur C. Ohand, those are the four authors. Xylitol has been widely documented to have dental health benefits. People don't even know, but not everyone knows that there's a scientific paper out there that shows that if you get enough xylitol in your mouth at the critical times of day when you're eating something that's sugary or something that could cause cavities, that xylitol will kill all of the bad bacteria that causes cavities. It's been shown that if you get enough xylitol, it has a tremendously beneficial effect against cavities in the teeth. Not everybody knows that. They think it helps prevent cavities, but they don't know that it is 100% effective xylitol. They don't know that xylitol is 100% effective at preventing cavities completely. Like, it seems, at least for years, I've seen that that's true. You have to maybe be chewing it at the correct time, but I'm not even sure if you have to chew it every few hours or if you can just get away with doing it once a day. I'm not sure. I can't really know that. I doubt that once a day is enough, but I don't really know. I think maybe twice a day, three times a day. It's more like what you need to do, but you can also gargle with it and use it as a mouthwash, and that would be maybe just as effective as chewing gum, almost maybe more so, certainly more so for the case of strep throat, because we've seen that it suppresses the strep. Here it is. Here's the article on the suppression of the strep throat bacterium. I called it a virus once, but it's a bacterium, of course, a form of bacteria. Streptococcus pyogenes is the form that causes strep throat, and that is suppressed more than 95% by a 10% solution by weight of xylitol in water, as this study showed. Inhibited. More than 95% inhibited, as shown there. And the other beneficial effects, even though it's best known for its dental effects, well, we just showed it kills strep, okay? But it kills all the bad bacteria, and that's why it prevents cavities. Strep is another, probably a different form of strep, but another strep bacteria is the one that primarily is responsible for cavities in the teeth. It's good for skin. Xylitol is good for skin. It's amazing. They had to do an introduction about skin before they could talk about xylitol's benefits for the skin. They even had to include that because it's so beneficial for the skin. They had to write that in as part of the article. So that's our study for today. But look at so many different things here. But they're going to talk about the digestive tract also. It's beneficial for that. Yeah, it produces saturated fatty acids in the intestines. Those are beneficial. That's it for today. It's January 14th, 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 21:12 hours Canadian Eastern Time, and I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much, and in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star saying bye for now, and that was today's study from the article by yours truly, The Ark of Urartu. And it was part two of The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, chapter 12, and paragraph 3 that we covered today. So for me, it was perhaps more interesting, even for me, because it had to do with my own name, but anyone else who's got the name Green would find it interesting, probably.